in fact companies ever do want to come back and explore in the Arctic Ocean, they'll know what the basic safety and prevention requirements are.
The federal government announces stricter standards for offshore oil and gas drilling in the Arctic. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 7th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, how do rumors get started? Senator Dan Sullivan responds to speculation he may be a Donald Trump VP pick.
I was probably as surprised as you were when I got back here late afternoon and heard about this People magazine article.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The Obama administration today issued new regulations covering offshore drilling in the Arctic. The new rules will hold oil companies in the Arctic Ocean to a higher standard than those drilling in, say, the Gulf of Mexico. But as Rachel Waldholtz reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, no company currently has any plans to drill in the Arctic, and that seems unlikely to change anytime soon.
The Interior Department began formulating the regulations after Shell's effort to drill in the Arctic in 2012 resulted in a series of mishaps. Speaking on a conference call with reporters, Assistant Interior Secretary Janice Schneider called the new rules world class.
This rule seeks to set the highest safety and environmental standards for companies interested in Arctic exploration.
The regulations essentially codify the rules imposed on Shell during its 2015 drilling season, including a requirement that companies keep a second rig available at all times to drill a relief well. Shell called those regulations a contributing factor in its decision to pull out of the Arctic last fall. But Abigail Hopper, director of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, said the rules were prompted by mistakes that Shell itself made in 2012.
We realized that one of the challenges was the lack of contractor oversight and sort of a deficit in planning and the entire operation. And so we have required what's called an integrated operations plan. So that is a plan from the very beginning of the program all the way through demobilization at the very end.
The Department of the Interior is also deciding whether to include the Arctic in its next round of offshore lease sales. That decision is separate and is expected later this year. The new regulations only cover floating operations, not nearshore projects like Hilcorp's North Star unit or its proposed Liberty project, which drill from man-made gravel islands in the Beaufort Sea. The regulations prompted predictable reactions from industry and environmental groups. The Center for Biological Diversity emailed out a statement saying, simply, Arctic drilling can't be made safe, period. But other environmentalists called the regulations a good first step. Here's Mike Levine of the conservation group Oceana.
If, in fact, companies ever do want to come back and explore in the Arctic Ocean, they'll know what the basic safety and prevention requirements are, and they'll be substantially improved over what they used to be.
That said, Levine says he doesn't believe any company is truly prepared yet to deal with risks like oil spills. Meanwhile, Kara Moriarty of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association repeated her organization's warning that regulations will slow Arctic development.
Obviously, we're still trying to sift through all 348 pages. But at first blush, it does appear the federal government is creating additional cumbersome regulations that will make it more challenging to entice companies back to the Arctic when oil prices rebound.
It remains an open question what it would take to entice companies back to the Arctic, regulations or no regulations. Currently, no company has any plans to drill in the Beaufort or Chukchi Seas. In the 9 months since Shell announced it was abandoning its nearly decade-long quest in the region, several companies, including ConocoPhillips, Norway's Statoil, and the Spanish company Repsol, have relinquished leases. Of more than 700 leases purchased in the Arctic since 2003, only 43 remain. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
Is Donald Trump considering Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan for vice president? A piece by People magazine speculating the senator may be on the list of potential VP picks was ricocheting around social media yesterday. So what does the senator say?
Now, look, you know, Lori, I was out of state. I was out back home all last weekend, including up on the Yukon. So I was probably as surprised as you were when I got back here late afternoon and heard about this People magazine article. So, you know, I'm not sure how they do their vetting, but I can tell you this. I have not been contacted by the Trump campaign personally on this. What I can tell you is I was in a meeting with Donald Trump and a number of my Republican colleagues today, which I thought went well, but it went well in particular because I had the chance to talk to him after the meeting about an issue that I think most Alaskans are focused on, and that's our economy and energy. Opening ANWR, AKLNG, as critical not only to Alaska, but the country. And, you know, for someone who is going against a candidate in Hillary Clinton who says she wants to shut down Arctic development, to me it was a good opportunity to emphasize what I think is good for Alaska and the country.
Where do you think this came from, then? Where did People magazine get this idea?
Look, I have no idea, right? But I'll tell you this. I wake up every day focused on serving Alaska in the Senate. That's what I'm going to continue to focus on.
So just to be clear, Senator, you have no plans to, if you were asked to be Donald Trump's vice presidential pick?
No plans. My focus is on Alaska and serving our great state.
Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan responding to speculation that he may be in the running to be Donald Trump's vice president. An Alaska legislative official says the Alaska House Majority Spokesman facing assault charges is no longer employed by the state. Will Vandergriff's last day was Friday. That's according to Jeremiah Campbell, who has replaced Vandergriff as press secretary. Vandergriff is charged with two counts of misdemeanor assault in the June 12th incident at an apartment in Anchorage's Government Hill neighborhood. Police say the charges are in connection with an altercation. The police say involved striking a woman and holding her down by the throat. The charging document says the woman told police that since February, something like this had happened three or four times previously, but this time was the worst. Vandergriff had been on administrative leave because of the incident. He did not immediately respond to a call for comment. No attorney is listed in court documents for Vandergriff, who is scheduled for an arraignment on July 22nd. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, former Senate candidate Joe Miller backs an effort to recall Governor Bill Walker.
His devotion to basically the crony capitalist interests in the state, as opposed to the people's interests, I think fall squarely within the recall parameters.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. Mount Edgecombe High School provides a curriculum rich in culture and diversity, offering over 80 courses from art to advanced engineering and with activities from native dance to kayaking. Class sizes are no larger than 30. Explore your talents and develop your dreams. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
Governor Bill Walker faces a potential campaign to recall him from office. Joe Miller backs the effort. He was the runner-up in the 2010 U.S. Senate campaign and the 2014 Senate Republican primary. Miller cites Walker's veto of half of permanent fund dividend checks funding in explaining why he supports ousting the governor before Walker's term ends.
Cutting the people's money before really much substance and anything else, the fact that he misrepresented what he was going to do when he ran for office, basically his devotion to basically the crony capitalist interests in the state, as opposed to the people's interests, I think fall squarely within the recall parameters.
State law provides for four grounds for recall: lack of fitness, incompetence, neglect of duties, or corruption. The recall application must have nearly 29,000 signatures to start the formal recall petition process. The petition then must gather roughly 70,000 signatures in 180 days before the recall would be placed on the ballot. For his part, Walker said in an emailed statement that he respects the recall organizers' right to voice their objections to his budget vetoes, but it doesn't sway his decision on how to address the state's fiscal challenges. He adds that the permanent fund dividend will go to zero in 4 years without significant changes. There have only been two successful recalls of governors in U.S. history, North Dakota Governor Lynn Frazer in 1921 and California Governor Gray Davis in 2003, when Arnold Schwarzenegger replaced Davis. Fallout from Governor Walker's veto pen is hitting the Matanuska-Susitna borough hard. As Ellen Lockyer reports, borough officials are now grappling with a budget shortfall caused by millions of dollars in reduced state funding.
The news came on June 29th after tax bills had been mailed and far too late to rework the Matsu Borough's budget for this fiscal year. At a special borough assembly meeting on Wednesday, borough manager John Moosey laid out the bare facts. He said the governor has vetoed some of the money that directly affects municipalities, such as debt reimbursement and base student allocations and school transportation funding.
The Matsu seemed to get hit particularly hard. My view is trying to take immediate view on how this impacts our current operating budget. $5.7 million we expected to receive for debt reimbursement from the state was lost, and we were informed of that on June 29th. Now, it gave us really no time to react. 2017 started on July 1st.
Walker's vetoes took 25% out of the state's bond debt reimbursement to municipalities and placed the financial burden back on local governments. New Matsu School District Superintendent Gene Stone says the Matsu School District is looking at an additional $2.2 million in reduced state allocations due to Walker's vetoes.
The total $2.2 million was $1.356 million in pupil transportation, and a little over $800,000 in the base student allocation or the foundation formula. And so that equaled 2.2. That's what specifically impacts us. Obviously, we're concerned about the bond debt reimbursement from the borough because, you know, we're a growing district and we really rely on the community to support the bonds.
Stone says the reduction in the state debt service ratio is likely to discourage new school construction. The borough assembly at this point will urge legislators for a veto override at the next legislative special session on July 11th. But borough lobbyist John Harris says that will take a three-quarters vote from the entire legislature.
That's a big hurdle, and in my opinion, a very unlikely one.
The legislature must approve an override during the first 5 days of the special session, or Walker's vetoes stand, Harris said. Harris suggested the borough could urge legislators to consider submitting at the special session a funding bill, which would pay for bond reimbursement and school funding out of the permanent fund earnings. Right now, the two are being funded from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. At this point, the borough is instituting a hiring freeze and a no-overtime policy for staff in reaction to the new deficit. The borough assembly will meet again in 2 weeks to consider further action on the issue. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska has lost more than 2,000 jobs in the oil and gas industry since last year as the state faces its first recession in nearly three decades. This week, Alaska's Energy Desk is spotlighting those who have been affected by the downturn as part of the series An Uncertain Future. Tom Walsh arrived in the state 36 years ago after his boss at an oil company told him his paycheck was moving to Alaska and asked if he wanted to go with it. Now Walsh is a founding partner of Petrotechnical Resources Alaska, an oil and gas consulting company. His workforce has been hit hard by the downturn.
It's really been devastating, and it's been a big hit to our company. We were up to about 102 consulting employees a little over a year ago, and we're down to about 55 now, so roughly cut in half with contracts just being curtailed. And in the consulting side of the business, you expect that. You expect to be the first people that are basically exiting the building when a layoff is going to occur. And there have been some very deep cuts within the within our client companies. So we were kind of the first to go there, and we've lost a lot of contracts. It's tough for myself and my business partner to see that happen. We basically have to tell people that, you know, their contract has expired and there's really nothing for them to work on, and we are coaching people in how to get through this. Some of these folks just really can't afford to be out of work, and it's really tough for them. So we've done as best job as we can to keep those people employed and to look for other work that that we can kind of get them through the downturn. Others, we really have a lot of folks who are retirement age and they don't necessarily want to work that much. And so it's pretty straightforward for them. They just say, look, I'll take a little break and I'm interested if something does come up again. So we're fortunate in that aspect that we have people who are flexible, but many of our people and many of the people we know in the industry don't have that that ability to be that flexible, and there are a lot of people that are really very nervous about getting back to work, and we're doing everything we can to help them with that. You know, we've been through several downturns, and I think anybody who's been in the business for as long as I have, 36 years, you've been through a number of these, and this is you know, it has a great deal of similarity to past downturns in 86 and 2009 and others, but I think the difficulty that we're facing now is that the perception is that we don't have a bright future in the oil and gas industry in Alaska to look forward to. I'm very confident that things will turn around, and they already have started to turn around. And historically, you know, we have these depressed markets, and then we go back up again in price, and things are stable again.
Tom Walsh is a founding partner of Petrotechnical Resources Alaska, an oil and gas consulting company. His story came to us from Alaska's Energy Desk, a new collaboration between Alaska Public Media, KTOO, and KUCB. You can find more stories from this series, An Uncertain Future, online or on Facebook. Look for Alaska's Energy Desk. Kotzebue's fire chief is appearing in court today after being arrested on Saturday for drunk driving. According to a press release from Kotzebue's police department, 37-year-old Sean Ralston was driving the city's fire chief vehicle when an officer stopped him outside his home. Ralston showed signs of impairment during a field sobriety test and was taken into custody. A police officer found one crushed and one half-full beer can on the driver's side floor of the fire chief vehicle. Ralston was taken to the Kotzebue Regional Jail, where he blew a 0.167 breath alcohol content. That's more than twice the legal limit in the state of Alaska. Ralston was charged with driving under the influence, and his arraignment is scheduled for this afternoon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Apollo MT by Guardian Flight. Medevac memberships that protect you or a family member when there is a need for air medical transportation. Information available at apollomt.com. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Alaska State Troopers say a Big Lake man's disappearance last year is suspicious, and they are investigating it as a death. Troopers say 46-year-old Daniel Roy Buckwalter was last known to be alive the afternoon of August 4th, 2015, at a home in the Meadow Lakes area. 2 days later, troopers happened upon his pickup, but could not find the owner. The vehicle was impounded after Buckwalter was reported missing on August 12th. Troopers say foul play is suspected in the disappearance, and they are looking for further leads. The federal government is cracking down on the Juneau School District because its website discriminates against people with disabilities. People living with conditions like low vision and deafness use special features on their computers to make surfing the web possible. As KTOO's Quinton Chandler reports, a poor website design can make those features meaningless.
The Juneau School District was called out by the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights after receiving a complaint about the district's website.
A complaint had been filed with them because certain pages of its website were not accessible to people with disabilities.
That's Kristen Bartlett with the district. The department found similar problems with 10 other schools and education groups in 7 states, including the Montana School for the Deaf and Blind, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, and the Americans with Disabilities Act prohibit government agencies and any entity that gets federal money from discriminating against people with disabilities. In a settlement with the Department of Education, the district and the other education groups agreed to fix their sites.
In July, we'll be transitioning to a new website, and that service provider operates by the what's called the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines.
Bartlett says those guidelines are like best practices for web building. The Department of Education lists examples of problems disabled people might have with a website in a press release. But if you don't have the corresponding disabilities, it might be hard to picture the problem. So we found somebody who can.
I'm Bryn Marks. I am a low vision person, and I work in IT. I write web pages.
Marks works for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. We're sitting at his workstation, where he works on the agency's website and other internet applications. He has pretty standard equipment, PC, dual computer screens. It could be any workstation in any office, except...
Tooltip, Juneau School District, budget documents.
To read from a computer screen, Marks turns on special settings he says can be found in most PCs. He runs his mouse cursor over words and a narrator reads to him. He's had to adapt. Show me what this does for a web page.
You know.
So we're going to the Juneau School District
so
page.
Here's the page that you had mentioned. So this page is pretty interesting, actually, because I had looked at this with a screen reader originally, and normally, you know, if I mouse over these links, it'll read off what the link says, obviously, but in this case they don't, and I'm not quite sure why it doesn't. I mean, you'd have to go out of your way to turn that off.
Marks says it's pretty common for websites to be designed without considering people with disabilities. He thinks a lot of designers try to make their websites flashy, which can hurt accessibility.
A good design should be usable by anyone, and so that's really what I strive for, you know. Just to be good at my job, I have to be able to write accessible web pages.
Marks says government websites have among the worst accessibility, which he says is ironic considering the federal government passed the laws that protect people with disabilities from discrimination. As part of a deal with the Department of Education, the school district will eventually have regular compliance audits of its new site. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Since May, murals have been popping up around Homer thanks to the Peonies on Pioneer Mural Program. The program is led by an out-of-state art consultant with help from Bunnell Street Art Center and a handful of local artists. KBBI intern Casey Marsh has more.
Homer's main commercial street, Pioneer Avenue, is getting a facelift. Businesses are partnering with artists to highlight the local peony industry and to bring continuity to the town's business district.
It's a theme because we're celebrating the industry that's here, that's budding from the peony farms. And so you'll see peony in all of them because we're celebrating those.
That's Katie Perry, an art consultant from New York. The project has already resulted in 2 murals along Pioneer, both peony-themed, and volunteers are also planting hundreds of peony bulbs along the roadway. Peony farms are a growing industry in the Homer area, supplying cut flowers to national and international markets during a time of year when other areas can't produce them. Perry has been leading the 6-week program that has allowed local artists the opportunity to use the outdoors as their canvas. She says artists are eager to gain experience through community art projects.
There's a kind of a demand for training for artists right now across the nation. artists have the skill set and they want to continue to practice professionally, and a great way to do that is by being a mural painter.
Artists are creating 8 original murals. Some are painted straight onto the sides of buildings, and others are painted onto wooden panels that will be purchased by businesses and then permanently installed. One of the mural projects involved redoing the Heath Street mural, which was created by a local artist 25 years ago. The old image of a sailing boat was fading, so a team of artists stripped it off the wall and replaced it with multiple layers of new designs. The artist began with a colorful layer of peonies and finished off with a detailed comic strip design that depicts a fishing story of a man going off to sea while his wife awaits his return. Another artist in the group, Brianna Allen, describes a 16-foot-long, 8-foot-tall mural that will be permanently installed at the Lakeshore Mall.
There were salmon, and they were sort of like really abstract on the inside. Some were like rainbow-colored, some were filled in with floral. So we were trying to, the premise was to take that concept and make it ours by putting peonies inside the salmon.
Asia Freeman, the executive artistic director for Bunnell Street Arts Center, helped Perry create the program and has high expectations for the mural's effect on the community.
As we look forward and think about economic development for a community like Homer and Alaska in general, I think it's very important to support the efforts that are being made in areas like agriculture, the arts, cultural tourism, education. And Homer is well poised to be a leader in our state, and that's really exciting to me.
Perry says that the fact that the murals will remain here for years to come, having a lasting impact on the atmosphere in the community, is a large part of her motivation as a traveling artist.
When it's, you know, 30 degrees here and all gray and blue in the winter, those murals are really going to add a spice of color that's going to psychologically impact the residents as well as remind them of the great time in building and painting those murals.
So far, 2 murals are up on Pioneer Avenue, on a retaining wall and at a car wash. Organizers hope to see the rest installed soon. In Homer, I'm Casey Marsh.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Ellen Lockyer in the Mat-Su Valley, Andrew Kitchenman and Quentin Chandler in Juneau, and Casey Marsh in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to 4-year colleges or other post-secondary education. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.